gonna start from Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We're up to the eighth line to Meisvei. So just before we jump into the Gemara, just to give a quick recap of what we mentioned yesterday, because it's gonna be important to keep in mind as we go on in this Gemara. We had a machlokas between Rabbah and Rabbi Eliezer about the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, where according to Rabbah, the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim regarding the nature of Tumas Avodah Zarah was whether Avodah Zarah is metame be'evan mesama. If I have an idol on top of a large rock, is the kli underneath tame? That's according to Rabbah, that's the machlokas. Whereas according to Rabbi Eliezer, the machlokas was whether Avodah Zarah is metame be'masa, whether it's metame by carrying. So keep that in mind as we go on in the Gemara. So the Gemara now asks the following question. Gemara says, Meisvei, Avodah Zarah kisheretz, shamsheha kisheretz. Rabbi Akiva omer, Avodah Zarah kenida, shamsheha kisheretz. So this is kind of reflective of a lot of the things that we were speaking about yesterday. According to the Chachamim, according to the Rabbanan, so Avodah Zarah and the Meshamsheh Avodah Zarah, the accessories that we spoke a lot about yesterday, all have the status of a sheretz, whereas Rabbi Akiva says that the idol itself has the status of Tumas Nida, the Meshamsheha, the accessories, those have the status of Tumas Sheretz. So the Gemara explains. Bishlam al Rabbi Elazar Nicha el la Rabba Kashia. So this Brisa makes a lot of sense according to Rabbi Elazar, because again, remember, Rabbi Elazar is the one who says that everyone agrees that there is no Tumah of Evan Mesama. The Machlokas is regarding whether there's Tumas Masa. But according to Rabba, everyone, both Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, subscribe to the fact that Avodah Zarah is subject to Tumas Masa, to making you Tameh by carrying. The problem is that according to this Brisa, that's not true. Because according to the Chachamim, Avodah Zarah and the Meshamsheh Avodah Zarah both have the status of a sheretz. And we know that a sheretz is not metame b'tumas masa. If I carry a sheretz without touching it, I am not going to be tame. So the question is, how does Rabbah understand this Brisa? How can Rabbah look at a Brisa that says that the Rabbanan hold that Avodah Zarah is like a sheretz, if in reality, if Rabbah assumes that everyone agrees that Avodah Zarah is subject to Tumas Masa? So the Gemara says, no. Amar lecha Rabbah, mi alima mi masnisen, de katani eitzav, va'avanav, va'afarav, metamin kesheretz, ve'okimna mai kesheretz, de lo metame be'evin mesama, hachanami, de lo metame be'evin mesama. So Rabbah rejects this Brisa. He says, why are you assuming that this Brisa is any stronger? Is any stronger than the Mishnah, right? Because in other words, we have the Mishnah that we quoted from Maseches Avodah Zarah yesterday that told us that, let's say for example, I have the bricks and the stones and the dust from the Beis Avodah Zarah; those are all metame with the status of a sheretz. And the Gemara on yesterday's daf explained what that means is that it's not metame be'evin mesama. So if I have a brick from an idol or I have dust or whatever from a Beis Avodah Zarah, or I have an idol itself, so Rabbah says, the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah teaches us that it's not metame be'evin mesama. So Rabbah can argue on this Brisa and say, yeah, this Brisa is against the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, so I side with the Mishnah. And therefore, Rabbah is still entitled to say that Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim are actually having a machlokes regarding whether, in other words, regarding Evin Mesama and not regarding Tumas Masa. Oh, can everyone just mute themselves if you didn't already? Okay, so fine. So that's one proof which the Gemara deflects. Okay, the Gemara tries again. Meisvei, Nachri v'Nachris Avodah Zarah Shamsheha Hein V'lo Hisitan Rabbi Akiva Omer Hein V'Hisitan. So again, another similar type of a Brisa. The Brisa here is discussing the status of Tuma not only of Avodah Zarah and its accessories, as we spoke a lot about yesterday, but actually of non-Jewish people in general. Now, Mida Oraisa, non-Jewish men and women are not Metame necessarily. However, as we'll see in the second of the Gemara, Chazal made a gzera derabanan that all non-Jewish men have the status of a zav, and we'll see, you know, what the parameters of that status are for non-Jewish women. But they are mitame midrabanan. Why Chazal made that gzera is a separate discussion. What the nature of that gzera was, but Chazal made a gzera derabanan saying that all non-Jewish people are tame midrabanan. So the Gemara says again, we have a machlokas here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva again regarding the status of, in other words, regarding the scope of that tumah. According to the Chachamim, so idols and accessories to idols and non-Jewish people, they themselves are Tameh, but not carrying them, whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, even carrying them will make you Tameh. So that means we have the same question we had on the previous Brisa, which is, Bishlam al Rabbi Elazar Necha el al Rabba Kashya. How does Rabbah read this Brisa? Because again, remember, Rabbah is the one who said, right, that the Machlokes is, I'm sorry, Rabbah is the one who said that everyone agrees that there is Tumas Masa by Avodah Zarah, that even even, in other words, that even the Chachamim agree that Avodah Zarah makes you tameh by carrying, but according to this Brisa, again, you see that that's not true, because the Chachamim say explicitly that idols and non-Jews and accessories are only metameh themselves when you touch them, but not when you carry them. So how does Rabbah explain the Brisa? So the Gemara says, no, Amar lecha Rabbah, v'litameich, nachri v'nachris, na'mi hein v'lo hisidon. So Rabbah, instead of trying to answer the question, you know, in a classic Jewish fashion, asks a question against the original question. So Rabbah is now going to show, based on his question, that this Brisa is actually corrupted, that this Brisa is inaccurate, and therefore it's not a valid source to ask a question from. Why does Rabbah assume that this Brisa is corrupted? He says, because I'll show you from the second part of the Brisa that it's inaccurate. Because what else did the Brisa mention? The Brisa also mentioned the status of non-Jewish men and women, where according to the Chachamim, we said that non-Jewish men and women are only metame when you touch them, but not when you carry them without touching them. Now that is a problem. Why is that a problem? The Gemara says, "V'hasanya daber al b'nei Yisrael metamin b'ziva ve'ein nachrim metamin b'ziva avol gazru aleihem sheyehu kizavin l'chol devrei." This is what we were alluding to before. The mida oraisa, non-Jewish men and women are not metamin. There is no such thing as a zav and a zava and a nida for a non-Jew mida oraisa. However, the Chachamim made a gzera derabbanan. Again, without getting into the reasons why, they made a gzera derabbanan that non-Jewish men and women should be treated like a zav and a zava. So the question is, if that's the case, so then if once Chazal made a gzera derabbanan treating non-Jews like zavs and zavas, so then we should just say that any time that you carry them, you should become tamei. And yet this Brisa says that according to the Chachamim, that's not the case. So Rabbah says, you see that this Brisa is inaccurate, it's corrupted, and therefore you cannot ask me any questions from this Brisa. So the question, of course, is, okay, so how does Rabbah explain the Brisa? So the Gemara says, Elo Rabbah misaritz letamei, nachri v'nachris, hein v'hisitan v'even misama shalahen, avodah zara hi v'hisita aval lo even misama shalah. Rabbi Akiva omer, avodah zara hi v'hisita v'even misama shalah. According to Rabbah basically just changes the Brisa. Rabbah says that everybody agrees that avodah zara is subject to tumas masa, which again was Rabbah's premise from yesterday's daf. The machlokas is whether avodah zara is also subject to the tumah of even misama. Again, when the idol is on top of a big rock and there's a kli underneath, is that going to effectuate tumah or not? So that's the machlokas according to Rabbah. The Rabbi Elazar misaris tameh. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says no. Nachri v'nachris hein v'hisita v'even misama shalahen avodah zara hi v'lo hisita. The Rabbi Akiva omer avodah zara hi v'hisita. And again, according to Rabbi Elazar, the machlokas is whether avodah zara is metame b'tumas masa in the first place. Does avodah zara make you tameh when you carry it? So again, the Gemara is kind of just restating this machlokas again and again, and trying to prove and then ultimately deflect proofs from different brisos as to which position is correct. So the Gemara now has almost like a textual question. The Gemara says, "Maskiflo Rav Ashi, my hein." So if you recall from the brisos that we were just quoting, so the lashonus in the brisa was right, "Nachri v'nachris avodah zara m'shamsha hein v'lo hisitan," or hein v'hisitan. Why does the brisa use the word hein? Hein means these, or they are metame when you move them. Meaning Rav Ashi's question is basically the following. If we're discussing, you know, the status of whether an idol or whether a non-Jew makes you tame when you carry them, or when you or if they're sitting on top of a rock, let's say, that obviously presupposes that they are tame in the first place, right? In other words, it's kind of a little bit odd to talk about you know whether something makes you tame by carrying or by sitting on top of a rock if it wasn't tame to begin with, if the whole item wasn't tame to begin with, right? In other words, if I take, let's say, a tahor item and put it on a rock, then obviously that's not going to do anything to a kli underneath. Obviously, the avodah zara and the non-Jews are obviously tame. The question, therefore, is why does the brisa have to mention hein? Hein teaches me that, oh, by the way, the avodah zara and the non-Jews are tame. We know that already. If they're not tame, then there's no discussion here. Then this whole gemara that we spent the last day and a half on is completely moot. So obviously they're tame. Why does the brisa have to go out of its way to emphasize, and by the way, the non-Jews and the avodah zara are tame? Of course they are. So the gemara says, you're right. Elo amar Rav Ashi, hachi kamar. This is really what the brisa was emphasizing. Nachri v'nachris, bein hein shehisitu es achirim v'vein achirim shehisitu osan temeim, avodah zara shehisita achirim tohorin, achirim shehisitu osan temeim, misham sheha bein hein shehisitu es achirim v'vein achirim shehisitu osan tohorin. Rabbi Akiva omer, nachri v'nachris v'avodah zara, bein hein shehisitu es achirim v'vein achirim shehisitu osan temeim, misham sheha bein hein shehisitu achirim v'vein achirim shehisitu osan tohorin. So the Gemara basically says that there are three different levels or three different categories of tumah when it comes to non-Jews, avodah zara, and the accessories to the avodah zara, And that is the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva. Specifically, the Gemara says, when it comes to, let's say, for example, actual Avodah Zarah, I'm sorry, when it comes to non-Jews, so according to the Chachamim, whether a non-Jewish person carries you or you carry them, you become Tameh. When it comes to Avodah Zarah, so then the Chachamim have a split. The Chachamim say that if you carry an idol, then yes, you become Tameh. However, if an idol carries you, then you're not Tameh. What on earth does that mean that an idol carries you? So you have to wait a few minutes in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to ask that question in a second. But when it comes to the Mishamshei Avodah Zarah, the accessories, then that will not make you Tameh no matter what, whether you carry it or it carries you. Again, whatever that means, you are not going to become Tameh. That's all according to the Chachamim. However, Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Rabbi Akiva says that it's not true. He says when it comes to a non-Jew or to an idol, so then whether they move you or you move them, then you become Tameh. Whereas when it comes to the accessories of the idol, then if it moves you, you are not Tameh, but if you move it, then you are Tameh. Basically, just think about it like this. Rabbi Akiva is like one step more machmir than the Rabbanan are according to this answer. Because in other words, Rabbi Akiva says that the non-Jews and the idols are Tameh, make you Tameh by carrying no matter what, no matter who's carrying who. Whereas the only point of distinction is by the accessories. In other words, if you carry the accessories, you're Tameh, but not the other way around. Whereas the Rabbanan think that split between you carrying them versus them carrying you applies even to the idol, not just to the accessories of the idol. So that's basically, there's a one-step differential between the two. So now the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, which is, Avodah Zarah bishlama acherim shehisitu osa mishkachas la, elahi shehisita es acherim heichim mishkachas. So what does it even mean that an idol moves you? An idol is an inanimate object. How is it possibly moving anyone? So the Gemara says, Omar Rami bereder avyeva kiddes nan, hazav v'chaf moznayim ba'uchlinu mashkin v'chaf shnia, kara hazav temeyin, karu hein tahor. And this is basically similar to a case in the Mishnah Mesechah Zavin of, let's say, for example, a Zav is on one side of a scale and there's food on the other side of the scale. The question is, does that food become Tameh? So the Mishnah says it depends basically which way the scales are tipped, right? So if the Zav is heavier than the food is Tameh. If not, then the food remains Tar. So it's the same thing by an idol. If I put an idol on one side of a scale and I put, a Kli on the other side, if the idol is heavier than the Kli, then the Kli is Tameh. And if it's not, then the Kli remains Tar.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because that again, there's no direct contact when you carry either, right? That's right. In other words, tumas masa means I'm carrying without touching, but that's called tumas masa. That's a form of carry. Okay, so the Gemara now asks, Kiman Ozla Hadistanyu, who is the author of the following brisa? Kola Timeos Hamesitos Tahoros Chutz Mehisito Shalzav Shalomatzinu Lochaver B'chol HaTorah Kula Lema Deloke Rabbi Akiva the Ika Rabbi Akiva Yikanami Avodah Zarah. So comes the Gemara and suggests the following. When the Braisa says that anything which makes you, which is Tameh, right, so that if I carry it, I'm Tahor, except for when it comes to a Zav, in other words, like this, let's say I carry something or someone who's Tameh without touching them, so the Gemara says, then you're always going to be Tahor unless the person you're carrying happens to be a Zav, then you're going to become Tameh. So the fact that the Gemara only mentions a Zav and not Avodah Zarah, which would lead us to believe that Rabbi Akiva cannot be the author of this Braisa, because Rabbi Akiva just told us on the bottom of the previous Amud that carrying Avodah Zarah even without touching it makes you Tameh. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a proof. Afilu Tema Rabbi Akiva, Tanya Zav, hold the Dameh Lay. Maybe this Braisa can reflect Rabbi Akiva, and all the Braisa meant to say was that a Zav and anything which resembles a Zav will make you Tameh when you carry it even without touching it. So the assumption here obviously is that we're coming to include Avodah Zarah, and again, because we know that a Zav and a Nida are pretty similar in terms of the scope of Tumah, and we already mentioned in the beginning of this parak that a Nida and that that there's an implicit connection between Nida and Avodah Zarah. Okay, so the Gemara now raises the question that we've been alluding to a lot on yesterday's Daf, the question of Rav Chaim Bar Guria that we kept on mentioning yesterday. By Rav Chaim Bar Guria, Avodah Zarah Yeshna Le'Ivarim, Oena Le'Ivarim. Again, remember this question yesterday. If a piece of the idol breaks off, or if a piece of the idol is leaning on a Kli, does that make the Kli Tameh? So the Gemara explains the question. Heicha dehejo yachol achazir losi boilecha dechaman demachberes Tameh. So if the idol is not broken so badly, in other words, it's broken, but it's not that hard for a regular person to fix. It's not broken beyond repair, then everyone agrees that that idol is basically halakhically considered to be fully intact, and therefore it definitely will make the kli tameh. The question is, what if the idol is broken to such an extent that you would really require the work of an expert, of a craftsman, to put it back together? You can't just have some guy come and like glue it back on. So the Gemara explains, so in other words, one option is to say that, in other words, since a regular person can't glue it back together, can't fix it, it's considered broken, and if it's broken, therefore it's not going to be metame. On the other hand, you can argue that maybe not. Maybe the idol, it's not missing anything. In other words, what that means is that, yes, it's true that, let's say, a limb of the idol broke off, but there's nothing missing from the structure, meaning it's not like you have like a hole in the head of the idol. It's not like you're missing like a chunk in the middle, meaning like you're missing a limb of the idol, which is a piece that's missing, but it's not like there's a chunk missing from the middle, which would that would undermine the status of the idol more so than a limb missing. So that's one suffix in the Gemara. Then the Gemara presents...
Does this depend on whether the it broke naturally or the...
That's a good question. Yeah. So if a non-Jew broke off the arm and basically made a declaration that he no longer considers this an idol, then the idol is considered batel no matter what. So that's a different story. Here we're talking about the idol.
You need the declaration. It's not just correct. A physical break.
Correct. Well, I mean, again, if an idol breaks beyond repair, as the Gemara is pointing out here, so then it's not metame anyway, right? But again, we're trying to determine what does that mean that it's broken beyond repair. That's part of the Gemara's question. Like, how do we define?
I'm thinking like a good old Venus de Milo.
It sounds like from the Gemara that again the idol needs to break to a certain point in order for it to be tameh. In order for it to lose its status of tumah, the Gemara is going to try now to continue to define what exactly that means. Okay, so again, this was one version of the Gemara suffix.
We already learned by a kli. If you have a kli, you make a small hole in a kli, it removes the tumor of that kli.
Correct.
Now it's shame kli.
Right.
So even though it functions as a kli, but since there's a small hole in it, it's no longer.
Why is it
any different by a kli? Why are we being so more machmir by a bodhisattva?
First of all, two things. First of all, it's not entirely true that a small hole makes a kli no longer a makabel tuma. We actually spoke about this back in Maseches Brachos, the Mishnah in Kalim, that a kli needs to actually have a hole to the point where it loses its functionality. In other words, it has to have a hole. Let's say, for example, the Mishnah in Kalim says that in order for a kli to no longer be makabel tuma, it has to develop a hole the size of a pomegranate. So that's not a small hole. That's a hole that completely undermines the functionality of the kli. Also, just by the way, in terms of the standards for Avodah Zarah, the standards for Avodah Zarah versus the standards for what is considered a kli are going to be very different. Because when it comes to Avodah Zarah, we're not really interested in is this functional or not, but we're more interested in is this still called an idol, right? It's a much different question. It's a much different set of rules that we're trying to figure out here, because we're not interested in the functionality per se of the idol, but more in whether a person would still worship this thing. Is it still considered intact enough that people would worship it? Okay, so this was all one version of the question. The Gemara now presents a slightly different version. The Iko de Boilo Lahaki. So some presented the question the opposite way. Hecha de in Hedro Yocho Lahakazir Loti Boilocha de Command de Mesabra Dame. So everyone agrees that in a case where a regular person can't repair the idol, so then everyone says that it's considered to be like it's broken. But what if a regular person can fix it? So do we say Kevin de Hedro Yocho Lahakazir Command de Mesabra Dame? Oh, Dilma Hashta Mio Kashaf of Sharia take. So the Gemara leaves as an unresolved question. Do we say on the one hand, since the hedgehog can fix it, therefore it's considered to be halachically connected, or maybe not? Maybe right now it's not connected. So if at the end of the day it's not connected right now, therefore halachically it's not called connected, and therefore it's not metame. So the Gemara leaves that as a teiku. The Gemara leaves it as an unresolved question. Okay. What if I have a piece of an idol that is less than a kezias? What's the halacha regarding that? So the Gemara explains. Maskeflor of Yosef Lamai. Like regarding what area of halacha are we talking about here? If the question is an idol that's less than a kezias, is there an isser of worshiping that? The Gemara says that's a crazy question. Lo yehayel zvov bal ekron desanya vayasimu lohem bal bris lelohim zez zvov bal ekron malame shekol echad viachad aso demus yirasu manicha besu. The Gemara references a type of an idol that's mentioned in Sefer Malachim known as Zvuv Bal Akron. It was this tiny little god that's the size of a fly. It fit into your wallet. into your pocket, and whenever you would remember your god, you would take it out, you would kiss it, you would hug it, whatever you would do, whatever service you would do to the idol. So the idol was obviously less than the size of a kazai, so it's still called an idol. So it can't be, in other words, Gemara can't be asking me a question in terms of whether it's usher to worship less than a kazayas of an idol. For sure it is, because we see there is an idol itself, a whole idol itself, which is less than a kazayas to begin with. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela le'inyan tumamai. The question must be, is less than a kazayas of an idol, does that make you tummy? So what's the nature of the question? Do we say, kevan de iskish l'sheretz, ma sheretz b'cha adasha, af avodazar nami b'cha adasha, o dilma ha iskish l'meis, ma meis b'chazayas, af avodazar b'chazayas. Very similar to the questions that we were raising on yesterday's daf. The question is, to which type of tuma are we comparing avodah zarah? If we compare it to tuma sheretz, so we know that the standards for sheretz to make you tameh, you have to have at least the size of an adasha, the size of a lentil, which is larger than a kazayas. Whereas in the case of tumas meis, you only require a kazayas of the meis, a kazayas of the dead body to make you tameh. So that's the question. How much of an idol do I need to have in front of me in order to become tameh? So what's the answer to this question? Amar of Avya v'isei maraba bar ula tashma desanya avodah zarah p'chusa mikazayas ein but tuma kol ikar shenemar v'yashlichas afara al kever b'nei ha'am mamis b'chazayas af avodah zarah b'chazayas. Comes the Gemara and says, yeah, you have to have at least a kazayas in order for it to make you tummy. So the question now is, of course, the same question we asked already twice on yesterday's daf. V'rabbanan l'may hilchasa iskash l'sheret. So according to the Rabbanan, why is avodah zarah compared to a sheret? Says the Gemara, d'lo matami b'masa, to teach you, like we mentioned yesterday, that avodah zarah does not make you tummy when you carry it. Again, remember, this is all according to the Rabbanan, not according to Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, okay, so in other words, what? In other words, the Rabbanan say we compare it to a sheret to teach you that it's not matami b'masa. L'nida de'ino le'evar. And we also mentioned this yesterday and also on today's daf, that avodah zarah is compared to a nida in that it's not matame if a piece of the avodah zarah breaks off, a limb breaks off, right? It's not matame. And l'meis to lo matame b'chadasha. And the ramification of avodah zarah being compared to a dead body is that if I only have a lentil size of the idol, it's not matame. I require the size of a kezias. So the Gemara says, but hang on one second. Ema l'chumra. L'may hulchasa aksharachmana l'sheretz l'tamuye b'chadasha l'nida l'tamuye b'evin mesama aksharachmana l'meis l'tamuye b'ohel. So the Gemara says, hang on a second. Why are we assuming that these three areas of halacha, namely sheretz, nida, and meis, are all being used to teach me halachos that end up being kulas? Remember, we said that we compare it to sheretz because there's no tumas masa. We compare it to nida to teach me that there's no tumas evar if a limb of the idol breaks off. We compare it to tumas meis to teach me that it has to be at least the size of a kazayas. The Gemara says, I could have just as easily interpreted all three of these halachos as a chumra, meaning I could have said the following. I could have said, maybe we compare it to sheretz to teach me that avodah zarah is even metame with the size of a lentil, which is smaller than a kazayas. Or maybe we compare it to nida to teach me that avodah zarah is even metame with evan mesama when it's on top of the rock. And maybe we compare it to, to tumas meis to teach me that it's even metame in an ohel, right? That if it's, let's say, in the same room as someone, the same tent as someone, it's metame. Why is the Gemara assuming that we're going to be lenient by avodah zarah? In other words, normally, if anything, We usually find Chazal are very, very machmir when it comes to avodah zarah. So if anything, I would think that the ramifications of these three types of tumah, of sheretz, nida, and meis, if anything, should actually spell out a chumra and not a kula. Why do these three areas of halacha translate into kulas? So the Gemara explains, tumas avodah zarah d'rabbanani, v'kula v'chumra l'kula makshinim, l'chumra lo makshinim, because as we mentioned from the beginning of this parak, the entire concept of tumah by avodah zarah is an invention of the Rabbanan. The whole concept is a din d'rabbanan, right? In other words, again, we're not condoning idol worship. Idol worship itself is obviously an Isser Doraisa. But in terms of the tumah associated with an idol, that's obviously only Durabana. There are no psukim in Chumash that say that if I touch an idol, I become tummy. That's not a thing in Chumash, right? There's sheretz, and there's mace, and there's nida, and there's av, and zava. There's no tumas avodah zarah in Chumash. Tumas avodah zarah was a din Durabanan. So since the whole concept of tumas avodah zarah is only Durabanan, therefore the Rabbanan have the right to be mako, and therefore all these halachas are going to translate into kulas. Okay. So the Mishnah.
I find it hard.
Yeah.
If we're saying, I understand what we're saying, that it's tumah of idol worship. The tumah of an idol is based on a derabbanan.
Right.
But it seems strange to me if that we're saying that no matter how small it is, we feel that it's an idol. Why? It seems odd that once you've defined it as an idol, based no matter what the size is. And I would think that Kuma would follow if it's as long as it's like, I'll call it a priya to atzmo.
In other words, you're saying, like in the case we mentioned in the Gemara before of the zvuv, the small fly.
In the last couple of dafim, you talked about the subjectivity of every single thing. The application needed to be
correct.
Your eyes, whatever it might be, it had to be valuable. Now we're making a call based on the idol worshiper will appreciate it or not.
But again, okay, but again, it's important to realize, though, that all of those topics that we spoke about were all discussing a completely different area of halacha, right? We were talking about what's considered chasha for the purposes of carrying on Shabbos, right? Those are very, very different questions than what's considered the size of an idol. Now, I do agree with you, Billy, fundamentally, that if I have a whole idol, like you said, like a bria b'fnei atzmo, right, that to begin with is less than a kezias, my inclination would be also to call that Tameh. But again, you have to realize that the Chazal and the Torah in general always have to operate in the realm of Shiurim, right? We have to have certain measurements for things, right? That's just the way halacha works, right? You have to have a kezias of matzah. You have to eat a kezias or a kibetz at the bench, right? Or let's say, for example, to get malchus, right? You have to eat a kezias of chazir or basr b'chalav to get malchus, right? So meaning everything operates under certain numbers, under certain measurements. So this is almost like a technicality. Like we in other words, you're right. Again, If I have a whole idol that's less than a kesayis, again, no one's debating the isser of worshipping that idol. In terms of the technical question about whether it would be able to transmit tumah, that's what the Gemara is trying to figure out. Okay, so let's move on to the Mishnah. The Mishnah, a very, very short and very kind of odd Mishnah. Minayin l'sfina shehi tahora, shenemar derech aniya belevyam. How do I know that a boat is tahor? So the Mishnah quotes a pasuk from Mishlei. The pasuk of Mishlei says that boats travel in the ocean. Okay, so how does that teach me that boats are not matame? So the Gemara explains, pshita aniya belev yami. So okay, everyone knows that boats travel in the ocean. What exactly is the chiddush of this pasuk? Ha kamash malan kiyam ma yam tohor af sfina tohora. So this is the first source in the Gemara that just as an ocean is a body of water that purifies, as we know, it's like a mikvah essentially. So too a boat is not makabel tuma because the pasuk in Mishlei compares a boat to an ocean. That's source number one. However, Tanya Chananya Omer nilmida misak. Chananya has a different source that he knows that a boat is not mekabel tuma. He derives it from the tuma of a sackcloth, namely masak mitaltel mitaltel moli verekan afkol mitaltel moli verekan laafuke sfina deina mitaltelas moli verekan. So we know that in Chumash, in many places, the Torah references the fact that a sackcloth is a certain type of an item which is mekabel tuma. That's true for tumas tsaras. It's true for shechva zera. It's true for sheretz. For basically any form of tuma that exists. So a sackcloth is subject to those forms of tuma. So the Gemara says, so in other words, according to Chananya, we derive certain basic principles regarding the parameters of tuma from the case of a sackcloth, namely, just as a sackcloth is something which one can carry regardless of whether it's empty or full. Obviously, an empty sackcloth is very light, but even if I fill up a sackcloth with, I don't know, with potatoes, let's say, so it'll be heavy, but it's not impossible to carry. So therefore, only something which is able to be carried, whether it's full or whether it's empty, is subject to these types of tuma, like a sackcloth. But something like a boat, where you can't carry a boat regardless of whether it's full or empty, it's just impossible to carry a boat. Therefore, the Gemara says that tuma does not apply to a boat. Boat is not mekabel tuma. So according to Chananya, this is the source that a boat is not mekabel tuma because it's not like a sackcloth. So the Gemara asks, "My benai, what's the difference between the two sources?" Meaning, at the end of the day, everyone agrees that a boat is not mekabel tuma. So the Gemara says, "Iko benai sfina shel cheres man da amar aniya belev yam hanami belev yam hi leman da amar kesak hanach dechsive gavi sak diimi taltelas moli v'regon in hilo lo avol sfina shel cheres afal gav dinami taltelas moli v'regon inami sfina sayardin leman da amar aniya belev yam hi hanami aniya belev yam hi leman da amar mitaltelas." So the Gemara explains that there are two possible nafkaminas here. One is what we call is regarding a sfina shel cheres, regarding a boat made of earthenware, and the other is regarding a sfina hayardin, which is basically just like a small tugboat. So on the one hand, these boats, the earthenware boats or the small tugboats, they also travel in the ocean. So according to the first source of the Gemara, they would also not be subject to tumah. But according to the second source of the Gemara, so there's two different reasons why these two types of boats are not mekabel tumah. In the case of the earthenware boat, so the reason, in other words, even though an earthenware boat is still going to be heavy and you're still not going to be able to carry it even if there's no one on the boat, but the Gemara says that the reason why that type of boat might still be subject to Tumah, according to Chananya at least, is because earthenware is not an item which even makes the list of items that are Tumah. Meaning, in order for something to even be in the conversation of being part or being exempted from Tumah, it needs to at least be somewhat similar to sackcloths, to garments, to leather, to things of that nature. So in other words, the Gemara says the reason why a boat of earthenware, even if it's incredible incredibly heavy would not be makabel. Would be makabel tuma according to Hananya, is because it's not part of the conversation. In other words, it doesn't even make the conversation in the first place. That's one. That's for the first case. And then when it comes to the second example of the tugboat, the Sfinas Hayardin, so that one is much more obvious why that's not included, because that boat actually is portable, because you actually can theoretically carry a tugboat, assuming it's very light. It's not impossible to carry. So therefore, according to the second answer, according to Hananya, that boat would in fact be mekabel tuma. And the Gemara explains to Amar Rabbi Chanina, ben Akavya, b'mneima Amru Sfinas Hayardin Temeya. Why did Chazal say that these little tugboats on the Jordan River are mekabel tuma? So the Gemara says, b'mneisha toanim oso biavasha umaridin osalamayim. They were so light that people could pick them up and put them on dry land and put them back in the water. So according to Hananya, if the reason why boats in general are not mekabel tuma is because they're impossible to carry. So if I find you a boat that's possible to carry, then obviously according to Hananya, it's going to be mekabel tuma. Now again, according to the first answer, or in other words, according to the first source, it makes no difference how light or heavy the boat is. It's just about, does this thing travel in the ocean? If the answer is yes, then it's not mekabel tuma. Okay, so the Gemara now says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, Lo'olam al yimna adam esatim im beis ha-medrash va'afilu sha'a achas. A person should never hold themselves back from going to the beis medrash, even for a moment. Shari kama shanim nishnes mishna zo beis ha-medrash, v'lon esgala taima, achabar Rabbi Chanina ben Akavyu pirsha. Because for there were many, many years where this halacha had been taught in the beis medrash, namely the halacha regarding, the tugboat and the earthenware boat, and no one understood the reason. In other words, why should the tugboat be different than all the other boats? So until one day Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya got up and he explained, because the tugboat is portable, because it's movable, therefore it's mekabel tuma. And the Gemara just says parenthetically, Amar Rabbi Yonasan, La'olam al yimna adam esatzim beis ha-medrash midivrei Torah v'afilu b'shas misa. A person should never hold themselves back from learning Torah and from going to the beis medrash, even at a time when they're on their deathbed. Shenemar, it says in Parshas Chukas, Zos ha-Torah adam ki yamus ba'ohel, which again, in the literal context of the psukim, is the prelude to the concept of tumas ohel, right? If I'm in the same tent, the same room as a dead body, I become tameh. However, the Gemara has almost like a homiletic, almost like a drushy interpretation of that pasuk, where the Gemara says, afilu b'shas misa tehe osik b'torah, that the pasuk says, even when a person is on their deathbed, they're about to die, you should learn Torah then as well. And Amar Ish Lakish, ein divrei Torah miskaimen ala b'misha meimis atzma olea shenamar zos ha-Torah adam kiyomis b'ol. And Ish Lakish has another interpretation that words of Torah will only last in a person who, figuratively kills themselves over Torah. That's what we typically call amelus batorah. If you really put the effort into learning Torah, so that's the only way that you're really going to have a handle on your Torah learning. Okay.
Yeah, Yaakov. Why didn't they
equate it to Efer Paraduma? Equate what to Efer Paraduma?
The Sfina, even though, they quit the summit that it cannot be carried on the ocean. Or the sun. But here I give you something that can be carried and still metamic. And metal, paraduma.
Okay, well, I mean, first of all, the ashes of the Paraduma are not at all similar. They're not, yeah, but again, the ashes of the Paraduma are not at all similar to a boat. Like they're mamish, like no connection, living or dead, to a boat. And also,
that's exactly the point. There is no rules to it.
No, but. Okay, but that's goof of the problem, though. Meaning, because if Parad, first of all, Parad, the actual Paraduma are such a tremendous chiddush anyway that I don't think Chazal would use that to derive other areas of halacha. You can't use something which is such a crazy chiddush to derive to other areas. And also, on top of that, it's not at all similar to the case of the boat. Usually, when Chazal are making limudim, you want to use something which is in the general parsha. You want to use something which at least is somewhat similar. Okay.
Rabbi,
yeah.
We said a boat can't become tamek. So if someone dies on a boat, that boat is not tamek. But does it negate the tuma if they, let's say, you carry
a
corpse in a coffin and stuff? I mean,
no. In other words, it, that just means that the boat is not going to become tamek, no matter who's on the boat. But obviously, the people who are themselves tamek will still remain tamek. They're not going to lose their status of being tummy just because they're on a boat, right? In other words, the boat itself is impervious to becoming tummy. That's true. The boat itself will never become tummy, again, unless it's a tugboat or whatever. But if it's a normal boat, it's never going to become tummy. Okay, so let's just finish up this Gemara. Amar Rava, v'lachananya tiltul adei shvar b'shmei tiltul. So according to Hananya, if something can be carried, in other words, if something is, let's say, very heavy, let's say a boat, right? So normal people cannot carry this boat. But let's say, for example, I can hook up my oxen to the boat, and the oxen can pull the boat. So according to Hananya, that is, in fact, called a valid form of carrying, which would therefore mean that that boat would be subject to Tumah. How do we know that? It's not. Shalosh Agalosin. There are three categories. There are three types of wagons. Asuya Kikatidra Tumea Medris. If the wagon is made like a chair where it's surrounded on all sides, it's basically a place where a Zav, Anita can actually sit in, then it's going to obviously be Tumea Tumas Medris if they sit in the chair. Kimita, if it's made like a bed, then Tumea Mace, then it will be subject to Tumas Mace if you put a dead body on it. Shalavanim Tehorim Klum. If it's made out of stone, so we know that typically speaking, Kelim made out of stone are not Mekabel Tumah. But if there's a hole in the kli, in the stone kli, that's larger, that's less than the size of a pomegranate, which again, as we mentioned this before, that means that it's still a functional kli, so then even the stone kli will still, even the stone wagon will still be subject to Tumah. And then on the other hand, the Gemara says, Shalosh Tevo, saying there are also three types of chests. So Tevoch Apischa Mitzita Tumea Medrash. If the whole of the chest is on the side, so then it's gonna, then the chest is Metame with Tumas Medrash, because you can use it to sit on. Milamala Tumea Mace. If the hole is on top, then it's Metame with Tumas Mace. Vahava Bemida Tahora Miklum. Whereas if the chest is so heavy it's impossible to carry, then it is going to be completely tar. So again, the point of this Brisa is to prove, and the Mishnah is to prove, that when something is heavy, but it's possible to carry with oxen, for example, then it will still be subject to the regular dinim of Tumah.